to Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show.
Hi, I'm Phil Proctor.
I'm Ted Bonnet.
And we're in a brand new studio in Glendale, brand new, and we have a repeat guest. So what's going on?
I'm a repeat offender, aren't I? Wait.
Yes, you are. Ed the Begley.
Correct.
No longer a junior to us.
I'm an old friend, very senior.
Did you say Ed the Begley?
Ed the Begley.
I like it. Marlon used to call me Ed the Bagel.
Isn't that funny? That's what I was just thinking.
Yep.
So what do you think? What do you think of the new digs?
I like it a lot
because I can't hear you on them. No, I can hear myself because I'm used to talking to myself a lot.
But your headphones aren't working?
No, I mean I can't hear anybody but me. Oh, okay, we're gonna work.
Isn't this exciting, folks? You get to work out the new studio with us.
I got the feed on this one. I'm hearing everything.
I can't hear Ed.
You can't hear Ed?
No, I'm probably gonna have to take my earphones
Phil,
off.
So Phil's out of it.
Oh, that's good. Hey, I got it.
You got it?
Ed, you're a genius.
Aren't I? I'm just amazing.
I didn't know you had that technical.
I turned into a clockwise direction.
You have a mathematical mind.
Don't I?
Yes.
Actually, that's true. With the numbers game, the 255-136-1402 game, you can tell that, you know, what day of the week it is. Yep.
Uh-huh. Very, very good.
Harry Nilsson taught me that.
Listen, I don't know what day of the week it is now.
That's why I drive.
Very good.
Yeah, and Phil takes the ride with me just because he doesn't even know what day of the week it is.
You're a smart man.
Yeah, but here we are.
Yeah, we had a little lunch at Porto's. You know, my theater company, the Antilles Company, is here in Glendale on Broadway, appropriately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Melinda and I, my darling late wife, did plays together there for decades. Not always here. Mm-hmm. We started in Lancashire. With a little place
right,
there,
I remember
right?
when you guys were on Lancashire.
Yeah.
Yes,
and we did some terrific stuff. A lot of Gilbert and Sullivan. Oh, it was so much fun. And now we have a beautiful 99-seat theater or a 99-cent theater
store,
as I call it. You know,
my kind of theater.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to have a memorial for my darling late wife, either late May or late June or early July. I have to talk to the theater because it'll be at the theater, our artistic home.
Maybe we'll even have luck with parking.
Maybe you will. Oh, there's easy parking on Arzak Avenue up in the great parking structure, the Armenian parking structure. You know?
Everything's Armenian here.
There's a lot of I have a lot of Armenian friends who live here. Yes.
Interesting. Well,
I think you have to be an Armenian and a friend in order to live in this town.
I think you do.
Last night, I saw the most amazing thing.
What?
I saw a rocket ship take off.
Vandenberg?
Yeah, out of Vandenberg. I just happened upon YouTube. As the 2-minute countdown, I grabbed my binoculars. I had just bought some stabilizing
binoculars. You lived down in Santa Monica.
Yeah, down on the beach. And I had my stabilizing binoculars, so I was actually ready for it. It launched at the perfect time. It was all better communication. But these things are like clockwork now. It takes off. And I've been at KSC to see the shuttles take off.
KSC.
Oh. Kennedy Space Center, to see the shuttles take off from three miles away, which is an astounding experience.
You can watch the chickens take off from KFC.
Oh, man. So this one, you can't hear the rocket go, but it was dusk. So when it got up into the sky, the sun was there illuminating it, but I was in the dark, so I could see it perfectly. I could see the fire coming out of the engines in this beautiful symmetry. And then I saw the engine cut off, main engine cut off. I saw the booster separate.
Oh, my God, all with binoculars.
All with binoculars. Very clearly, not distant. And then I saw the second stage rockets ignite and the rocket ship just careen south over Mexico. And I watched the booster fall back to Earth with controlled fire and rockets all the way down.
To land, right?
To land on a barge.
Was this the second booster or the first booster?
The launch booster, the main
launch
booster.
Right,
that's
right.
The one that's reusable that comes back and lands.
Yeah, that's thrilling.
Spikes
to see
it
that.
On a barge.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And, you know, I never quite understood how they managed to get those things to come back to KS, to Kennedy Space Center and land.
It's
right
a rope. There's a rope.
I think they are pulling to it.
It's like a surfer with a board. You got a lanyard that's attached.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, it was just the most beautiful, beautiful thing to see. Yeah, I love California.
I have a friend who named Vanna Bonta, another late friend, who is circling in space. She's in orbit in one of those little star. What do they call them? Starlets? Starlets?
Oh, you mean like the ashes? Her ashes?
Yeah, her ashes are circling the world. And you can track them. You know, oh, she's over Greenland right now, you know.
Do you do that?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Well, she was married to a rocket scientist, really, and she helped invent the two-suit. The two-suit is a outfit that you can wear in weightless space to have intercourse.
Oh, boy.
Boy, how are they selling?
How do you like that?
Huh?
How are they selling?
Yeah, see, what does he get? Half price off.
So this is a 5 mile high club.
Yeah, and she, of course, yeah. She is the author of the first quantum physics science fiction story called Flight. Quite a famous science fiction artist. She was an amazing person. I met her doing ADR because she was fluent in Italian. She actually was a recognized Italian poet. Nationally recognized poet and singer and
tell me her name again.
Vanna Bonta. Vanna Bonta.
Great name.
She was something, and she left us, like my other dear friend Karen Black, to cancer too early.
I knew Karen a bit. I loved her. She
wasn't
was a
she
dear,
something?
Wonderful actress, wonderful person,
smart,
so smart.
Oh. Yeah, well, anyway, our dear friends, they're up there somewhere with my wife, I hope.
Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show, and our guest today is Ed Begley Jr., back for another round.
A repeat offender.
Yes, thank you so much for coming back.
You should say, ladies and gentlemen, the first time Ed was here, we were talking about his book, The Temple of Tranquility and Step on It, which we could not more highly recommend.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
So much fun. What a great read. It is.
And what a life.
What a life.
For people who are tuning in and are maybe younger, maybe, you know, 30, and haven't heard or don't know much about, let's just review quickly. You are probably best known for St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere was a big job for me, my first really great job.
Yeah.
It kind of changed my life. I worked fairly steadily ever since, from that moment to this. That was my first good job. But then I was in Accidental Tourist, and I was in She-Devil, and I was in Meet the Applegates, and I was in, 6 Feet Under, Better Call Saul.
Mm. Wow. What did you do in Better Call Saul?
I played Cliff Maine. He was part of a law team that, Michael McKean was part of, and Patrick Fabian was part of, and Jimmy worked for us for a while, and until he gave me the runaround pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderfully written show. And now they have a new show coming out with Ray Seahorn. Vince is doing another show. And I don't know. I think it's untitled at this point, but it's quite mysterious what's going on. Nobody really knows what it's about.
Well, he's always very mysterious about his productions.
He is. When you read for his shows, you don't read the script what you're going to do. They like write a scene that's purely for audition. I don't think it'll ever be part of anything.
Wow.
Yeah. Very clever.
What was the set like on Saul? Was it, I can imagine a lot of funny people on that set.
Bob's a great comic,
Bob Odenkirk.
Bob Odenkirk, a wonderful comic. He's been on so many funny shows. He worked with Del Close back in the day at Second City. He's from Chicago. And he wrote a great book that kind of sums it all up. The book is entitled Comedy, 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 Drama. That's the title of his book, and it's an apt title. It's very good. I highly recommend that book as well. He's had quite a rich
and
colorful
life. He's quite an actor.
Great actor, great guy. And he wrote with his daughter. I think he did some of the writing. She did all the artwork. It's a wonderful book that they worked on during the pandemic. Father and daughter together, they did this wonderful book where she did the illustrations, and she's a world-class illustrator. She's just a class A illustrator. She's very, very good. I would recommend it.
And, of course, you're also very well known for your environmentalism and your leadership in that. And always you've been sort of the face of energy, green energy and efficiency.
Yeah, and you just made a big splash, Ed.
Yes.
By taking public transportation to the Academy Awards, right?
Yeah, you
did. I did, and
LA
I can't
Times.
Take credit. My daughter Hayden, who was the architect of it this time, where she did not join me. Her mother went this time. Said, you ain't going again, young lady. And so I went on my own, not with my daughter. I went with my wife, but she came. She rode with some friends where there was no extra fuel for her part of the journey either. But I took the subway there. And Hayden, recorded it all,
documented
and put it up on TikTok. And it turned out to be a very, very nice piece of me taking the subway once again to the Oscars. So
yeah, I think you were on the front page of the LA Times, weren't you?
Yeah, it was amazing.
And so how did it go for you?
It's not that much more work, though. It's a lot of work for the woman who deigns to go with me. You know, and Rochelle, I repeat, did not do that. She didn't want to walk in heels from Vine Street all the way to Highland. That's
sure.
The hard job.
Right.
Nothing
right.
for a guy. You just, you know, that's
yeah,
a short
walk. Yeah, you're on roller skates. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My retractable roller skate shoes. I should get a pair of those now that I think about it.
And did you go just as an industry spectator, or did you have something going?
I was a governor for many years, that many being 15 years. I was a governor for a while, and they wisely put in term limits because, you know, I was a governor for a long time. It's time for new blood to come into the Academy, and it has, and it's wonderful.
I think it was a good show this year, I think.
Very good show. Jimmy Kimmel was great, and I was very happy with the awards. I really just love the show. The sound is so great there. You know, it is the Dolby Theater, so it kind of has to be good, and it really is. It never disappoints. The mix is so wonderful. I'm pretty hard of hearing, but I can hear how good this sound is.
What?
It
Dolby, of course, for people who don't know, was that's his name. It's the name of the guy who invented this extraordinary sound system.
Noise reduction system.
Noise reduction.
And that's really the sound.
That's how it started, I guess, noise reduction. Then it became much more than noise reduction.
But the new systems that are coming out, like the Sphere in Las Vegas,
amazing.
They're redefining sound. And now you just can't have – they direct the sound like laser. And so there are no bad seats for sound. It's that directed. So that's a good – that bodes well for your $600 tickets.
Yeah, you can be sitting behind a pillar and hear and everything
hear
that's going
and,
on.
And because you bought that to sit behind the pillar because it was only $200.
That's right. But talking of the new sound, we were recently – I moderated a panel at the podcast convention, the annual podcast convention.
Evolutions
2024, down at the JW Marriott downtown. Man, I haven't been downtown for a long time. It is like being in Legoland.
It's a new downtown.
I mean, all the buildings, they're all in different architectural styles.
Right.
It's really, you know, future world. Very, very bizarre and fun to be down there. And we were promoting the launch of a podcast that Ted did the sound design for called Hindsight the Day Before, which is a thriller, going to be a six-part, six-hour podcast.
Initially.
Launching on May 1st on, what, every
Your
platform in the world.
Your favorite podcast platform.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was really, really fun to talk to Kelly Lyons, who is the writer and director, and Mark Haynes, who is our wonderful producer. And we had another actor, and Ted, of course, who was talking about the sound design, which was the main reason we were there. And a wonderful actor named M.C. Gainey. Have you ever worked with him?
That name is familiar.
You probably met him in jail.
Probably.
Yeah. Yes, he probably did. He's best known for the being the naked man in Sideways.
Oh, right.
He was also in Lost. He was in Breakdown with Kurt Russell. He played a very bad man.
With J.T. Walsh and all that other fun.
He was the pilot Swamp Dog in Con Air.
Right.
Of the con plane. That was him.
Now, what are you? You're doing some stuff right now, too, aren't you, Ed?
I'm doing I got another episode of Better Call Saul, Young Sheldon. I'm working on Young Sheldon this week. And then there's a wonderful show called Bookie, also a Chuck Lorre show, very funny show with Sebastian.
2 and a Half Men, if anybody wants to know Chuck Lorre.
Great writer, great producer.
And
I'm
funny.
Doing that. Yeah, very, very funny. So I'm doing that. That'll start in a week or so. So I'm very lucky.
Well, now, what's the platform for that? Is that going to be network?
That's on, it's they had one season already. This is their second season. It's on Max, HBO
Bookie,
Max.
Bookie on Max, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. Yeah.
What role are you playing? Or can't you talk
I don't know it? Yet. They said you want to do Chuck's got a new show, and so you'll be rapping on Sheldon, and so you'll start on that a day or so after. I said, whatever Chuck's
you
got,
couldn't
please.
Say no.
Are you kidding?
Tell us about Chuck Lorre. I mean,
he's the greatest. He has how many shows does he have on? Like 9 or something?
A lot.
And they're all great shows.
Is he related to Peter Lorre by any chance?
He is not. Not that I never asked that. I should probably put it to him. But he's a great guy, a great writer, and this show Bookie is really extraordinary. And you know, I don't know what character he wants me to play, but he didn't audition me, so I'm sure not going to audition him and say, send me a script and let me see how
right,
it is.
Right.
Whatever you want me to do. Stand on my head, fly in a biplane, I'll do whatever you say.
Oh, good.
Somebody that good.
Yeah.
Isn't it great to have those opportunities where you have that, that trust?
Yeah.
I mean, Phil will do anything I ask him to do.
My wife, Rochelle, would, oh, no, I got it backwards. She wouldn't do anything
Let's
I asked her to
do.
Let's
not go there.
Certainly not going to go to the Oscars on the subway.
Hey, I just got my first job for 2024. Might be my last. I don't know. We never know
never.
In our business. But it's my first job for this year is a radio show.
There you go. About time.
It's one I've been no, it's not about time. It's about a small town called Odyssey. The show is called Adventures in Odyssey. It's been on the air for over, I don't know, 35 years. It's a show directed for at children to teach family Christian family values, believe it or not.
Oh, you're the right
man
for that.
Some of them have values, by the way.
Yes, okay. They do.
And the good Christians. And I played Detective Paul House. I am the town detective, so I get a chance to do some wonderful, fun things. I have a daughter, I have a relationship, you know, and that, so the story can go into there as well. And like this, I never know exactly what they're going to throw at me, you know, mm-hmm. until I see the script and go, oh. And so it's great, great fun to do. And I think that's one of the most interesting things about doing our work, which is we're constantly challenged to create a new character.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it?
And the longer that we have worked, because, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore, or vultures, right? But you are always delighted to be offered another opportunity to create another character.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
You're at a point in your life where you're relaxed.
That's
and
right.
Yeah.
You enjoy it. You're comfortable.
I'm going to try this. If he doesn't like it, he doesn't like it. So
When
I did Batman Forever, the first rehearsal, I went in and Joel Schumacher was the director. And I came out. I'm supposed to meet Val Kilmer walking across the area that's a factory that he's working at. I go, Mr. Wayne. You know, like Franklin Pangborn kind of voice.
Yeah.
I think he's going, Ed.
Yes.
Calm down a little bit, Ed. Calm down. Fantastic, Ed. Do it that way when we roll. Perfect. And like you, you know, you got to go for it at this point in our lives.
Yeah.
Take some chances. If they don't like it, they'll pull you back. But bring them in some choices if they like them.
And you can go there.
Yeah. I play for an audience of one. You know, if the director likes it, I'll do it. If he doesn't, I'll do whatever the hell they say.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. I want to keep them happy.
But I'll tell you one funny story about the voiceover industry. A director friend of mine told me this story. He was the assistant to an advertising executive in a small, well, a big city like Detroit. And every week they would do a radio spot with the local car dealer, okay? And it was for radio. So they come in and record the guy, and then the executive would say, okay, I'm going to go have lunch, pull out, you know, four or five takes that I can choose from, and I'll see you in an hour. So my friend says, okay, what do we got? And he hears, uh-oh. This is what you don't want to hear from an engineer in a studio. You don't want to hear, uh-oh.
No.
He says, what's going on? He says, I don't know how to explain this to you, but I only got one take. What? I don't know what happened, but the other takes, I've lost them. Can you get them back? No, they're gone. Whoa, oh, my God, I'm going to lose my job. No, don't worry. I can fix this. So this is a true story. He took the one take. He slated it with different numbers.
Oh, boy.
You know, take three, take six, take five. And when the executive came back, he said, okay, what do we got? They played him the same take with different slates. And he said, okay, let me hear three and six.
Yeah, again.
And
there's something going on. Three is really great. It has a lot of energy, but six is more real and grounded.
Yeah, right. So we'll go with six. And they did it. They actually
fantastic.
Did it. That's my favorite voiceover story.
I love stories like that.
Yeah, because, you know, they'll work your tongue off to get something. Have some fun with it this time. Okay, what take is this? You know, 65. Yes. You know?
Sometimes you can get caught with something like that. You may know the tale. It's perhaps apocryphal. I heard it really happened. There was some guys that were hired by a big studio head, I don't remember who, to go just real second unit stuff. To go get a sunrise, you know, sunrise on the East Coast, you know, over the water.
Yeah, nice.
So they're hired to do that. They got their tickets. They're at Union Station having some drinks. And one guy says to the other, you know what we should do? What's that? I got a friend lives in Malibu. It looks kind of the same. We'll just go to Malibu and we'll shoot it there. And my friend works at Deluxe Labs. We'll have him print it in reverse. And
yeah.
It'll be the same. You see the sun, you know, coming up instead of going down.
Yeah,
if he does his job
right.
I'll make sure he does it right and doesn't screw us over.
Yeah.
So they do just that. They keep the money for the cash in the train tickets, get more drunk, do the thing, develop the film, print it in reverse, and promptly get fired. Why did they get fired?
Oh.
Take a second. You may come up with it.
Palm trees.
The waves were breaking out.
Oh,
the waves
of course.
Were going backwards.
The waves were not breaking on the shore. They were going backwards. And there was even one seagull that went flying backwards.
Drunk
to notice it. But it was a good plan on its face.
Oh, good plan on its face. I know. I was doing a movie with Dick Benjamin up in Canada, of course.
I love Dick.
Years ago, a movie for television. When they had movies for television. And I had another job the next day back in L.A. And I finished my main scene. And then they said, okay, tomorrow morning we'll catch the sunrise scene. Not tomorrow morning. I won't be here tomorrow morning. He said, well, we got you for 2 days. And the cameraman says, don't worry, we can fix this. And what he did, he said, sunset is the same as the light will be in the same place.
Right.
So
right.
They shot the sunset for the sunrise.
Yep.
And I read all the lines backwards, and it was perfect.
You can do anything, this guy. He's amazing.
Ed, let's talk about what's going on these days and how you
see
it.
Oh, no, please. Oh, no, don't, no, no, no.
No, you don't want to talk about today?
Oh, sure.
Okay,
let's
fine.
Do it.
Are you feeling good about, as an environmentalist, as dedicated as you are to it, how do you feel? Are you hopeful? I mean, you seem like a hopeful guy.
I am hopeful. I'm a glass half full guy, but I'm also realistic. There's a lot that we can save if we act now and do what we need to do for climate change and many other problems. You know, the air pollution we still face in some cities and, you know, water pollution and what have you, loss of species, coral reefs dying off. We can save a lot if we do what we need to do, but if we don't, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what we do, there's an amount of CO2 in the pipeline now that's going to do things.
Yeah.
There's an amount of sea level rise that's kind of baked into the whole equation at this point. We can't do it all. We're not going to save the day and everything's going to be the way it was in 1958 or 68 or 78 or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it will be if you vote for the Republicans.
That's true. Potterville, more Potterville. I don't think
Potterville, right.
There's talk about...
It's a Wonderful Life, yeah.
There's talk about engineering our way out of this. You know, the CO2 processing plants that suck the CO2 out of the air and then solidify it with water and inject it deep into the earth and turn it to rock.
Really?
Now, that's like a drop in the ocean, but
it is.
They feel as though these are all possibilities.
I hope that works in some substantial way and keep working on it and make it less expensive and make it work better. I'm all for that, to do that. But if you got a tub that's overflowing and it's going on the floor and now it's starting to leak in the floor below you, the first thing you got to do before you get mops and buckets and all that stuff, you want to turn the tap off.
Mm-hmm.
Turn off the faucet and stop using so much fossil fuel because we don't need to anymore. There's other ways to make electricity than fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
There's efficiencies we can do that have nothing to do really with creating any fossil fuel of any sort or even creating solar just to save energy by making our homes and offices more energy efficient. That's the big one. First of all, what you want to do, because it's cost effective, reduce your demand, because you may think you need 9 kilowatts of solar on your roof, but you only really need 7 if you make your home or office more energy efficient. Do it in the right order. Do what we know that works, because we know that a lot of stuff works. We have 4 times the cars in LA from 1970 when I started with all this. Millions more people, but a fraction of the smog. Why? Because the pollution controls worked. The catalytic converters worked. We cleaned up the power plants. We did all that other stuff, cutting down on the, you know, backyard barbecue kind of. You can still have a barbecue, but you don't use that lighter fluid. You use a newspaper and a little chimney thing.
Yep.
There's just ways to do things small like that, big like power plants, big like cars and trucks driving around, delivering goods and delivering people. Do the big and small, but start small right away so you get some tangible result right away. You see your power bill, if your person doesn't have a lot of dough, see your power bill go down. Then you go, well, this green stuff is pretty good. I got some extra green in my pocket. It's called money.
Right.
I like this green.
But now you've been driving electric cars since they were golf carts.
That's correct.
Like 1970?
1970. They were around for longer than that. Henry Ford's wife preferred her Baker Electric to his noisy contraption.
Interesting.
But mine was not an expensive Jay Leno collector's item car. It was a Taylor Dunn. They still make electric cars today, or more accurately, electric cart with a T at the end.
But the electric, the limitations seem to be mounting, and frustration seems to be growing for people who are attempting to go all electric in terms of charging stations.
Yeah, they call it a charge anxiety.
Yeah.
And they're correct. They got to do better with the chargers. We thought we had it all.
Yeah.
Biden's poured a lot of money into new chargers, what have you. There's a big pot of money that VW has put out there for their malfeasance where they fudged the things for the diesel VWs for a while. And so their penalty is to put out a lot of money and make sure there's a lot more chargers than they need to do that. Maintain the chargers. They don't have the right amount of maintenance people to maintain them. If you go to a charger again and again, you're trying to get from point A to point B and the charger's either blocked, out of order, you know, something is wrong with it. You're not going to do that a second time. You're going to get soured on electric vehicles. You're going to take it back. So you got to have I'm very fortunate. I get an electric car that has good range, and there's a charging infrastructure for it. You know, the Tesla has a charging infrastructure. I can and have driven many times to Albuquerque, driven to Texas and back, driven to Virginia and back, driven to New York and back.
Really? You've driven across the country in a Tesla?
Regularly. It's very, very easy.
How does that work? I mean, doesn't that add up to a lot of hours waiting for your car to charge?
It does not, because I'm multitasking. I need to eat breakfast anyway at about 8 or 9 o'clock. I leave the house at 6. 8 or 9 o'clock, I get to Needles, California. I'm going to want to stop and use the bathroom. I'm 74 and I want to eat. I'm hungry. I want to do the crossword if I got time waiting for the oatmeal to come to me.
Yeah. Okay.
All that's about 25 minutes is all. 25, less than 30 minutes, I go out to the car. It's nearly topped off in 25 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not fully. It wasn't out. When I got there, there was like a third left. But let me be clear. If you go 85 miles an hour, it's not going to let you get all the way to Needles. It's going to say, dude, I'm sorry, but you got to stop in Barstow. Just for 5 minutes, but you're going too fast. It doesn't say any of that, but it just goes.
So what's the sweet spot?
Yeah, that needle will be on low.
What's the velocity sweet spot?
I just go the speed limit. I know I'm not going to get a ticket. I go 65 where that's the limit. I go 70 if there's somebody behind me and I'm in a carpool lane or what have you, or in the fast lane momentarily, I'll pull over. I'll go 75 or whatever it takes to get out of their way. I'm not one of those, I'm allowed to be here at 65. I'm not that person.
Yeah.
You know, you want to keep people moving. They want to go faster. Absolutely. But I go 65 or 70, I just do whatever the posted limit is, and I can go cross country with very little trouble. I stop for lunch then at Flagstaff, and I'm there about 35, 45 minutes. I get almost fully topped off there. Then I can make it into Gallup, New Mexico, and then from there, Albuquerque is easy.
So you and your car you're getting topped off together.
You get
exactly.
Do you run into a charge station that's broken and you didn't know?
If you do, it reroutes you. Here's the thing. The technology today, it's certainly possible, and with the Tesla charging system, it is available, where if you're going, I'm going to go to Flagstaff. No, you know what? You got to stop in Glendale, Arizona. There's a Glendale, Arizona, believe it or not.
Right.
You got to stop in Glendale. There's some chargers there. Didn't say any of that. All you do, it's very simple. I'm putting all these little speeches in an inner monologue for the car. What it is, you just punch in your final destination in Albuquerque or New York, wherever it is, and just it tells you what to do. Get off here.
Oh, it does. It tells you where the charging stations are.
It tells you where it is. You're 2 miles, turn right at Flagstaff Boulevard. Turn left at Winokur Street.
Yeah.
You know, it just does all that. And it accounts for people who are all who have filled up the charging
days.
Yeah, if there's there's always 10 or 12 charge stations in any of these charging places. That's a lot. That's usually one or two left. But somehow it's suddenly full between when you planned on it originally. It just will reroute you to another one that's on your way. It never says, well, now you got to go all the way down to Phoenix from Flagstaff. I've never seen it do that. I've never heard of it doing that.
You find it practical. I mean, I read an article just this week about how people in the northern climes, the cold regions, are having a really hell of a time because it doesn't. You know, the cold, you can't hold the charge, and people are spending you pay for the electrical charge just like you do for gasoline. You're paying for energy, but in the freezing environments,
it's batteries. A different story. There, very different story. You have to it's like a pre-charge thing that you got to do with the car. I can't remember if it works while you're driving or parked, but you have to pre-charge it before you charge it because it becomes like molasses, this mm-hmm. electrolyte that's in the batteries. Mm-hmm. So there's a process where you have to pre-charge it. It's a very different thing driving an electric car with those kind of temperatures and
yeah.
all of that.
Yeah.
And you can't go the range you're used to, you know, 250-mile or 300-mile range. When it's sub-zero, you're not going to get that kind of range. You know, and there needs to be more people who are able to, in apartments or in homes, that are able to have a charger in their garage. You know, mm-hmm. many apartments nowadays, if they're over, 15 units or more, they got to put a charger in, something like that, 20 units. You have to put at least one charger in the parking garage. So things need to change if they want that to happen, because otherwise, if I was in a cold climb, it would be a very different driving. Indeed, I had it happen to me, actually, when I think about it, not the battery. There was no risk with the battery, because I'm always very cautious with that and watch it like a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going from Albuquerque back home. I had finished on Better Call Saul, and it was drizzling in Albuquerque. It went, okay, the drizzle is nothing. I'm ready to go. I'll drive home today. I can stand a little drizzle. But when I got up to altitude, the drizzle turned to snow.
Mm-hmm.
It became more serious snow. Pretty soon, there's only one or two trucks ahead of me. So I better pull off. And I couldn't pull off. None of the off-ramps were plowed.
Ooh.
I was behind just one lone truck. Then he finally pulled over and stopped. And it wasn't safe for me to do that. So I kept going. And the problem with the car is the guidance system stopped working when it got that cold. Why? Because there's no hot engine to keep, you know, there's a radiator at the front of most cars
right.
to keep that ice. There's a giant, huge 2-inch or 3-inch thick bra of ice on the front of the car. So all those guidance cameras and sensors were not working.
I got it, yeah.
And with the visibility poor, I'd drive very differently if there's any snow around. It's a whole different experience. If you're going to experience snow, right. you know, you got to do things way different.
It's snow fun, let me tell you.
I should not have left Albuquerque. I should have checked the weather going over that pass there, over the Continental Divide, for God's sake, I think. Oh, no, maybe that's the other way back, away from L.A. Yeah, that's the other side.
Yeah, yes,
if you're driving in reverse.
Yeah. But
still, you go over some pretty
still, you're going
ranges.
Up to an altitude. Yeah. Not forget about the Continental Divide.
So,
you're going up,
so it's not really all there yet. It's still
not there for the colder climbs. That's the only caveat.
What I've heard is that if you use reindeer, it you can get anywhere you want without any trouble.
That's true. That's a very good point.
Yeah, it worked for Santa. You know, what the heck?
You don't get frustrated with that? Say I should rent an internal combustion engine car? Do you ever do that where you go, I'm not?
No, because for me, I would just not do what I did, which was foolish, to leave Albuquerque where it's drizzling, not thinking, what does that drizzle become up 2,000-3,000 feet higher from where I am right now? I should have looked at that, stayed in Albuquerque until the weather broke, which it did just a few hours later. But I put myself in a dangerous situation because I wanted to get home. I was rushing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
how do you feel about the hybrids? Well, I drive a hybrid.
Hybrids are great. My daughter still drives a plug-in hybrid, but my mm-hmm. wife's car is pure electric. Mine is pure electric, and I can live within those parameters. But I live in mm-hmm. Southern California, you know.
That's right. That's right.
But people that live in Chicago, you know,
it's
how many days a year
can
they get to where they're going safely without, you know, do they have time to do a precondition for the battery for temperature reasons? And those are the questions. I think they really grill people who buy them in northern climes now.
I think
they make sure that they know what they're in for, because that's a big surprise to suddenly.
Getting a license for a gun.
Yeah.
Hydrogen-powered cars, which offer a more of an internal combustion experience of fueling.
Exactly.
The problem with hydrogen is that it still, by and large, requires carbon.
Yeah, most of it is coming from natural gas. That's the problem.
That's right.
They just take natural gas and turning it into hydrogen.
So until they come up with a way in which to create hydrogen,
which they have, and they're doing it. They need to do more of it to just make it from solar and wind. You know, pure solar, pure wind power. Because that's the problem with solar and wind. The sun doesn't shine all the time, and the wind doesn't blow all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a situation where you're making hydrogen, you know, and that's all you're doing with this huge array of solar, it's a perfect battery, if you will, because you can store that hydrogen and use it to fuel vehicles, and it's 100% pure, not just at the tailpipe, but pure at the
water,
at the factory, you know, wherever you're making your electricity, making your hydrogen.
California has what they call the camel hump or something, where every day, the day cycle of energy consumption, there is a net deficit between, because these renewables require sun and or wind.
Right.
And so obviously during the evenings, there's a deficit. And the big the big obstacle to all of this becoming reality is storage.
Right.
Storage is the thing. And also, our power grid is still first generation and is in decline. I mean, do you know there's like one set of power lines that get up to Santa Barbara?
I know. It's like a two-lane highway doing all the commerce.
That's
like
right.
The,
and it's
Route
over,
5 does. It's a little mountain road.
And they're all – it's over very fire-prone mountains.
Yeah.
So Santa Barbara invested – they had a dozen or two 18-wheelers with generators in the event of a simple forest fire, wildfire, could take out all the power from Santa Barbara for a relatively indefinite period. Power Grid 2.0, which we need to do. We need to build a second power.
Yes, we do.
We can't do it anymore because the easements aren't available because there's been so much development in the country since the first power grid. Mm. You can't find the land to string these things up.
Oh, boy.
So now they're talking about, you know, all the smart money is that the next grid has to be decentralized.
Microgrid.
Which it should be. Where you have small power generation that is hopefully powered by hydrogen or renewables. And then you have local distribution. It's much safer. It's much cleaner. It's much more efficient.
So why aren't you guys both on a national panel talking to the president and to Governor Newsom, or are you? Have you,
I bet
been
you are.
Consulted?
I'm not. They haven't enlisted my help for it, but they got people a lot smarter than me that know all this,
great,
too.
Yeah,
they just need to get to the right people and not be swayed by other interests to say, no, it's not ready for prime time. You can't do that. You can't make hydrogen out of solar or wind when, of course, you can. You can't have batteries that really work for storage of huge amounts of power. You absolutely can. They're doing it all over this country now in certain places, and they've been doing it in Australia for years, too. It's possible.
You know, so when you go to Las Vegas on the 15, you're driving, and right over the border, before you go over the border to Nevada, you, on the north side of the 15, you see these giant...
The mirrors.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's
called
the array.
It's the Ivanpah. It's Ivanpah is called the plant. This is a one-up that's never going to be replicated because it was an absolute boondoggle. There was some federal money put aside for renewables. So some fast-talking guy came up with this idea to build this giant. So if you drive by, you'll see these giant towers that glow because all they have a circle of hundreds, if not thousands,
all
of mirrors.
All focusing on that common point.
Right.
Heating.
Molten salt, I think.
Yeah, heating the molten salt and creating steam to generate power. And they thought that would be the answer, but it's not. They'll never build another one like that. But all these solar farms that they're building, everybody got in on buying land in the desert for making money on solar-powered energy. But the smart money knew that other investors didn't understand was that none of that means anything if you're not near an existing power transmission.
Right, you got to have it.
So
you
got
to take it to
that.
Where the need is great,
And the problem was it was like any birds that fly in there are eviscerated by the heat.
Yeah.
And they were actually worried that it was going to attract heat-seeking
missiles?
Yeah, they were worried it was going to – that if they were doing test firing from the Navy base into the Marine training base.
Dear. I know where you want me to go, but that's some other load there. I'm going to that heat-seeking.
Yeah, and they thought this was a real concern, that the heat-seeking missiles were going to go for that.
Well, I have a question. Is a sunflower a solar plant?
It is. The way it moves and everything, it's a
See,
plant
I'm smart,
sorts.
Too.
You certainly are.
Well, so I think we'll get out of it. I think we'll work our way out of this somehow.
Yeah.
I think we're just very resilient as a species, as dysfunctional as we are.
Yeah, we're not going to save everything, but we can save a lot, but we got to get cracking now.
Yeah.
There's a predicament that we have with the Salton Sea, the way it's polluted and what have you. It happened by accident from a drainage ditch many years ago. It needs to be remediated. The good news in tackling that problem is you can also get a lot of lithium out of it. There's a lot of lithium in the Salton Sea. So if they remediate properly, they could get to the lithium and get it from there and not do it by further impoverishing people in Africa and elsewhere by trying to get your lithium from places where it causes great environmental damage.
And have you ever bathed in lithium?
I haven't, but I know people that take it.
Ooh, I did.
What? For those folks out there like me who have no idea, lithium is used in batteries. Is that right?
It's used in batteries, people say, but it's so also toxic. What's going to happen to all these batteries? First of all, I know people that take lithium into their body every day.
Yeah.
They're not
it's
only
not good.
Not
They're very mellow.
They're very mellow.
They use it.
You bathed in lithium?
Yes. Because true. In an area of you're listening to the Sexy Boomer Show, by the way, our guest Ed Begley Jr. and I'm Ted and he's Phil, and we're talking bathing in lithium, and I was warned about it. But in South Central Colorado, in the Crestone area, by the Great Dunes National the Sand Dunes National Park,
sure,
a hotbed of UFO activity. It's a very high, strange place. It's the highest plateau valley in the Western Hemisphere. The Tibetan monks think that's the sister country. This is an amazing place. You think you're in Kansas, it's so flat, but you're 7,000 feet up, rung by 14,000 foot San Cristo Mountains. And there are hot springs in the middle of this valley, if you will, at 7,000 feet, and they're lithium infused. I mean, it's just a lot of lithium in the hot springs. And I was warned about it, I was on a very ambitious road trip, editorial road trip, and we my buddy and I were on this trip, and we decided to do it. And my friend said, "Listen, if you do it, don't drive after a hot tub." And we get in there. First of all, we did it that night, crashed out. We just fell onto our respective beds. Just crashed.
Yeah.
Said, "Well, that was so pleasant. Let's take it again." And we got in the hot tub, and we had to do 8 hours that day, and we were about a half an hour after we made a wrong turn before we even realized it. The lithium really is very powerful.
And what did it enervated
it,
you?
It sedates you in a way. And
it does. They give it to people who have anxiety.
That's right.
Ah. But it's not at all toxic, and there's nothing.
No, nothing
toxic. It's like people who take magnesium or something. You could take too much of it, certainly. You could take too much lithium or too much magnesium. People have died from taking too much iron. You got to be careful with
it. The thought was, with all the lithium in the Salton Sea, and there's a lot of lithium out west, is that maybe that's why L.A. has always been so chill.
I think you might be onto something.
There's just a lot of lithium.
What I love about L.A. is if you move the letters around, it spells legs on sale, because you got to have a car.
That's very good. That's a great anagram. I love that.
And, of course, if you're talking about Hollywood, it's sale on legs.
That's for sure.
Right?
Yep.
I love it.
Well, here we are in Glendale, California.
Yes, I haven't moved the letters of Glendale around. I think his legging got it cut.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. That. Glendale, in our new studios, ladies and gentlemen, yeah. KPFK, listener-supported station. And right now we're not pitching, but always send in a contribution to keep us on the air.
It's yes,
another funny thing, Ted. I don't know if you noticed. In our old studios, we were always complaining about the lack of air conditioning. Mm-hmm. I'm cold.
Are you cold?
No, I'm joking, but we actually have air conditioning in our brand-new spanking studios, and it's...
It's good to have fresh air when you're talking.
Very comfortable here. I like this new locale.
Yeah, the new locale is good. And the drive out wasn't so bad. We were a little bit wary about that.
Yeah.
But we were going in the right direction. You know, in this town, you have to be going in the right direction to get anywhere. You know, you look over and you say, look, it's a parking lot over there. But look, we're just breezing along. It's all timing, as you say.
Yep.
It's about timing and pre-planning.
It's true.
Are you by any chance getting a lot of emails from the MAGA people and Don Jr.? And are you getting...
They're so negative about
all
this.
I'm getting inundated. I don't know how I got
nothing like that.
Oh, I'm getting like 10, 12 a day, and it's fascinating. I'm getting from... all the usual suspects,
propaganda,
from Ted Cruz to Junior.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm going through it. I'm looking for what's their platform. What are they proposing? What's their proposition, value proposition come November? There is none.
No.
I think they're panicking. It's all aggrievement. They're desperate.
They're panicking.
They're saying... they're taking my building away, or it's all about Democrats, equal plague, equal evil.
Right.
And I just...
Otherness.
I think that we're in for a real landslide come November.
I certainly hope so.
I don't know. It seems like they just don't have it anymore. They have nothing.
Well, they don't seem to have anything that they're for.
Nothing to offer.
Yeah. It's a mudslide versus a landslide, if you will, right?
Very good.
The thing is also, I mean, I hear... The fact is that the propaganda that the right wing has been espousing for four decades now has definitely eroded people's sensibilities and understandings of things. Because again, Hitler's whole approach to all of this was, if you put out a big lie and you repeat it often enough, people will believe it. because it's a common, everybody's heard it. Of course, it's true. And in this case, there's a lot of negativity and misinformation. People making fun of the president because, oh, he's got dementia.
Right.
Well, he doesn't have dementia. I read a wonderful, rebuttal to that by a neuroscientist in Quora. And he wrote, he said he has a walking impediment and he had a stutter. He has a speech impediment.
He's had that his whole life.
In fact, I try to point that out to people.
No signs of dementia.
Yeah. And do you realize how well he's doing because he does have a stutter?
He has to overcome it.
I mean, you have to look at the half full glass. It's like the man is a stutterer and yet he has suppressed it so brilliantly. And that, yeah,
the
of
King's
course
speech.
he's going to struggle once in a while.
Go and watch the King's Speech.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. I couldn't do half as good as him. I really couldn't.
I know. And
he's
done so many good things.
Are you politically involved these days?
I help when there's a candidate that I feel is worthy. I certainly help them.
Uh-huh.
But I've always been a kind of reach across the aisle person my whole life, too, to get things accomplished.
Right.
Clean air, clean water. Richard Nixon signed the Clean Air Act. He reluctantly, the second time he signed the Clean Water Act, but he signed them, for God's sake.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's what we need. We can't just always be pulling each other apart. I've tried to do that. It's almost impossible to do that at this point in time, and that's really because of one party more than the other, I think.
Is there anything to reach to at this point?
No, I don't know what they're for.
Yeah.
I know what they're against. And I know.
I think they're for preserving their perceived way of life. And I'm starting to think that, you look statistically about organized religion falling out of favor. And yet our species has a herd mentality to it. And they seem to be where they're losing their religion, they're gaining in their politics and their extremism and their exclusionary behavior because it's a threat to their well-being. The gender thing is a threat to what they understand. And I wonder, it makes me miss religion. It's like, I'd rather have the religion, and to their side, you look at people who are in impoverished areas of the country who did not have a good education, who have lost their jobs to automation and AI and whatever you want to call it. They are hopeless. They are sad. They do want to work.
But they're
taking away their food stamps. They're calling them, hanging on. They're looked upon as obsolete takers. And I can see where they, a good con, and you got to admit, Trump is the perhaps
his best
history's best con ever.
You didn't buy one of the Bibles, $59.99.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and if you pay an extra $20, you get a copy of Mein Kampf, autographed by Trump.
In fact, if we have a few of them, Ed, if you would sign the Trump Bibles, we could probably.
Yeah, you come to here because you're singing.
We could sell those at the next pledge period.
Yeah, but
I commend you for reaching over the aisle. I always try to find common ground as well.
I get that from my wonderful dad. He was a conservative that liked to conserve. All this green stuff that I do, he did it because he was a factory worker that made it.
A conservative who believes in conserving. In Greenland, the Conservative Party believes in conserving.
And, and what about what the Republican Party was in the 50s and 60s?
Exactly. He was a pro-union, pro-labor conservative. He was great. He was the son of Irish immigrants. He lived through the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. His parents came over in a boat from Ireland. He was very much for unions and labor. And, it was a different world back then.
Yep.
Was he around for Reagan?
He knew Reagan a bit. Yeah, he was around for Reagan as governor. He knew him a bit from Screen Actors Guild. But Reagan was very much pro-union at that point when my dad knew him. Yeah, they walked the picket line together, I believe.
So Reagan was pro-union.
Oh, yes, very much so. He was the president of Screen Actors Guild, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, he sure was.
Yeah.
I had heard that he did become president of SAG, but he undermined it.
That might be. I don't know that, but I don't doubt that.
I mean, because I think of where we're at now is the Republicans play the long game really well, and I think we're seeing the fruits of the last, since Reagan, the privatization, the deregulation, basically the freeing of the wealth class.
The diseducation.
That was the problem in the early 60s with the middle class, the workers, because of the unions. Their wealth was increasing at a faster rate than the wealth class.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that, and come 64, it's like, we're over this.
Those were the good old days.
We're ending this.
Air traffic controllers was a big turning point.
That was it in 1980. That was a big, big turnaround. So, we haven't recovered from that yet.
And releasing all of the crazy people out onto the street.
Because the mental health care system had pretty much imploded. So they just closed them up and just put them out on
the
street.
That was their way of fixing it, just close them up and throw, put them out.
Listen, what do you think about the homelessness in our city? Has that bothered you, or have you put your
mind to it? It's a hard one to fix, but Karen Bass is doing a pretty good job right now. I certainly supported her for mayor, and I think she's doing a pretty damn good job of getting things done, getting more people off the streets, because you can't just keep saying, get those homeless people out from near my home. They're right near my backyard or whatever. You do that, but where do you move them to? Somebody else's council district.
The shuffling.
And now it's not like when I was a kid or even a teenager in my 20s, there were guys in trench coats down in Skid Row. There's families. There's people who are families out there with a tent with a couple of kids in
and
it.
They're
too,
and they're working families.
I know.
They're working families without homes.
That's we've got to build more affordable housing for them. We got to have people who are that are unhoused now, we got to find some way to get them off the streets. The ones that want to, there's a lot of people that are shelter resistant though that do not want to be somewhere else.
But and that speaks to the
I
mental.
Say a lot, not that big a number. And there's people who have drug problems. There's people who have mental problems, and those are separate things that you know all are an impediment to getting people off the streets. But you got to deal with each of them effectively and separately.
This proposition that we just passed, that Newsom championed. Prop 1, I guess. Right?
Yeah, I think it's good. I voted for it, and I think it's going to, you know, we need to really step up and do what it takes to get more people off the streets.
Yep.
And I think all this is going to work together. It's going to take longer than any of us hoped or thought, but it's going to happen. We're going to get, we're starting to turn the corner, I believe.
That's, well, but, you know, because what you said, it's taking time to to come to grips with this, but that allows the cynics to step in. You know,
so you're not doing anything.
You're just, you know, stealing money from us. And when are you going to wise up and, you know, stop voting for these crazy, giving money to all these crooks out there?
Well, Fox News, too.
There's so much negativity pervasive in our country now, and misinformation and
I don't think you should further tax the people, the middle class, but I certainly am happy with the income that I have. I'm very lucky as an actor to work the amount I do. So tax my tax group, that's for damn sure. Hit me hard, hit me again. I'm all for it. I always vote for it. It's not in my interest, but I vote for it because it's what we need to do. People who are that fortunate should pay some more.
And why do you think that the rich class is so resistant to helping the country? Helping, you know, things to actually
some
get
are, some
better.
Aren't. You know, people like Norman Lear, rest his soul, he was very generous.
Yes,
he did
was.
Very well. And people like Alan and Cindy Horn are very generous. People, you know, there's George Soros is very generous with progressive causes.
Yeah,
and
but right
people.
Now, right now, apparently some of the upper class, 1%, are going to back Trump. They're looking to back Trump again to put money behind
his campaign.
For
selfish reasons.
For selfish reasons. I mean, good
but
grief.
But then there's Gen Z, is it just who are statistically showing that they have evolved beyond the personal device. And the trends are now that younger kids are putting their phones on Do Not Disturb. And they're getting away from, they could see as a next generation, addictive quality of these.
Thank God, I didn't know that. I'm glad we're heading the right way because that's the big one.
Like I say, I always have hope in humanity. I think it has this ability to grow and get past things.
I've always worried, why should they want to support anything to protect the environment when their only exposure to it is a website? You know, they're not there getting their hands and their feet on it. And
but have you tried the Vision Pro? Oh, it's pretty sweet.
Pro is an immersive.
We're out of time.
No.
We have the 2-minute warning.
Don't say that. We're talking about optimism here.
Yes, that's right. Well, let's do it again and often. Repeat. Rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat. We'll think of you as being
Jr.
Mr. Rinse and Repeat.
Thank you so much for coming.
I love being with you, Ted.
I think we had a real KPFK-esque conversation. Yeah. And we didn't get too morose.
No.
I think
should we?
Yeah, I think disaster with a smile.
Leave it to the right wing.
Yeah.
If you want to hear morose, turn on right wing radio.
Yeah.
They'll bring you down.
You want to hear happy, cockeyed optimism?
Come
I'm
here.
I'm your man.
Right here with Ed Begley.
Sexy Boomer Show.
I'm Ted Bonnett.
I'm still Phil Proctor.
Yeah, that's great. And this is the Sexy Boomer Show, Phil and Ted's Sexy Boomer Show. You can hear all these delightful episodes at our website, sexyboomershow.com, because we repurpose these as podcasts.
Not con.
Yeah.
Com.
Sexyboomershow.com. We'll be back here next Tuesday with a really wigged out show.
Yeah. We're going to have a surprise next week.
Yeah, that we are.
So
I'll
get
be
ready.
Tuning in.
Yeah.
You got me hooked.
Oh, good.
Thank
it's
you.
Ed,
come
fun.
Back, would you please?
Anytime.
Wonderful.
Thank you,
All right,
you, Ted.
Everybody. Have
Thank
a great
you,
week out
God
there.
God bless you.
We'll stay sexy.
And don't forget the Temple of Tranquility and step on it!
Ed Begley's remarkable memoir.